42 members, my name is Paul Dollery. Thank you for joining us as we pore over the carcass of a truly dismal international window for Irish football. To do that, I am joined by the 42's Gavin Cooney. Gav, welcome along.
Hello.
Now, if you were online in the hours before the Luxembourg game on Saturday, you may have seen reports emerging that there was going to be a senior international debut for Gavin Bazunu, the 19-year-old goalkeeper. Also with us today is the man who broke that news. It's football journalist David Snaid. Good to have you with us again, Dave.
How's it going, lads? What's the story?
Now, lads, we last spoke 8 days ago, and I don't think we appreciated just how good we had it then, back in the glory days when we didn't know what it was like to lose at home to Luxembourg. Before we go back over the games against Luxembourg and Serbia, we might just talk about last night's 1-1 draw with Qatar. Gav, I'll come to you first. Did we see anything last night that may have even slightly brightened the forecast for the future, or can anything at all be taken away from a game like that, especially in the context of what went before it?
Things didn't get any worse. I suppose that's a good thing. You know, I mean, Roy Keane was saying this is rock bottom after the Luxembourg game, and you'd have to hope it is. But I have to say, I've proclaimed a few rock bottoms for Irish football in the last couple of years, and there's usually been further to fall, so maybe that's kind of blind optimism to hope that things can't get any worse. Thought it was a bit better. He stuck with his three at the back. It was a little bit different. It was more of a 3-4-3 really than a 3-5-2 with who was it, Robbie Brady and Daryl Horgan pulling out wide to Shane Long rather than two guys up top and one guy behind them. So there's a bit more pace in the team, which meant we were a lot more energetic in the opening few minutes. Daryl O'Shea was really good again, I thought. He moved out to the left of those three central defenders and did a lot better there than Kieran Clark did against Luxembourg. We scored a pretty good goal that was right out of Anthony Barry's playbook, the coach who's replaced Damien Duff. So, you know, things like Bleak when Duff left, for example, and there's a silver lining to be pulled from that. But there are a lot many darker clouds on the horizon for Stephen Kenny to deal with now as a result of the Luxembourg game. And I don't think any kind of result against Qatar would lighten that.
Dave, what was your assessment of it last night?
I would say the most positive thing from my point of view would just be the fact of how well Ireland did actually start the game on coming off the back of that Luxembourg game. And just because you're, I know obviously there was a good few changes, like 8 changes made, but it was kind of good to see that he could elicit a reaction and that there was players there who came into the team and were actually willing to inject a bit of pace and actually weren't sulking. Or if you're looking at it from the outside, you're thinking, well, if a manager has lost the dressing room here or players aren't sure of him, then it's going to be a pretty maybe sloppy or a poor start against Qatar. And then it was actually quite the opposite. It was probably the best Ireland have started the game. They kind of maybe took Qatar by surprise a little bit. They come out at them. So that's, when you're clutching at straws a little bit, that's probably the biggest positive from the game was the reaction, because after that then things kind of went a little bit of how the campaign so far has gone this so far under Stephen Kenny, but also in his reign, whereby just fizzled out a little bit. Like, it first half what was good, I think first half an hour kind of Qatar did obviously slowly, once Qatar, they did get a bit of a footing in the game and they looked a bit more comfortable. So I would say the most positive aspect, because it's pretty much been a kind of microcosm of what's happened at Kenny so far, was just the fact that there was able to be a reaction there from players who haven't played and had been dropped, and they came in and were able to actually put on a bit of a performance, and as has been the way, just weren't able to actually sustain it. There was a couple of, obviously, that Josh Cullen chance at the end kind of could have put a bit more of a gloss on it, but I suppose overall it's just been a bit of a window of frustration and more questions surrounding the manager and where things will be going and how long it'll take to get there.
Yeah, and before we press ahead, just to touch on something Gav mentioned there, Dave, Daryl O'Shea, still very early days for him, obviously, and I know he's had a couple of difficult days in the Premier League so far, which is understandable given how new he is to it, but he's someone who you went over and did the piece with just after he broke into the West Brom team, if I remember correctly. Early days, as I said, but you do get the impression that this is a young lad who's going to be one of the pillars of the team for a few years to come.
Yeah, well, it would seem so, just in terms of the selection alone, the fact that like he played in all the games. So Kenny is obviously was like, no, he wasn't going to give him a break. He wanted to keep him in there. And obviously, maybe part of that building a relationship with Seamus Coleman too, you would say would be important. And Yeah, he just looks very comfortable. Like, even wasn't it the Finland game his debut in the National League? Like, he even in that game, like, he looked very, very assured on the ball. Like, he doesn't tend to make too many mistakes, even his positional play. And even listening to him afterwards, you can remember people talking about, well, players that aren't used to playing different formations, whereas he actually is. He's kind of used to playing in a flat back four. He can play in a back five, he can play in a back three. He has that versatility about him, and he's almost like the perfect mix of what you'd be looking for. And it's like, you don't want to be still building up too much, because, like, he's still in a struggling West Brom team. He could well be a championship player last year and be going through a slog of it, but if you look at it, he does seem to have that perfect mix of what Kenny's looking for, in terms of having the ability to make those passes into midfield and get Ireland on the front foot, but also put a tackle in, win a header, read a game and do the basics of being a defender. And it was something, when I went over to West Brom that time a couple of years ago now, like, obviously Slaven Bilic was the manager at the time, and he wasn't really in the team at that point. He was around the squad, and the week I went over, he had just actually got his place full time in the actual dressing room. Even though he'd been around the first team squad at West Brom, he hadn't actually got a spot in the dressing room. And, like, he was still, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I remember putting in the piece because I thought it was interesting, still, like, buying his own boots at that point. And he wasn't one of these lads at West Brom who agents were coming to just get a few reps, were coming to try and, like, give them boots and all this. And it actually was the kit man, who Jack O'Smith, who League of Ireland people would know as well, a fellow from Dublin, he's the kit man there. He was making sure that he was getting them boots. And, like, it's just mad. And you think about that in a couple of years now, he's an international player, played in the Premier League, and he's the sort of player that you'd be looking at where teams who either are getting promoted or teams who want to maybe invest in youth, you'd be kind of looking at and thinking, like, he's worth the punt to have, because because of that ability to play in different formations and just take things in his stride. Because that was one thing that Bilic, he was just after the Toulon tournament, where Bilic was saying how he didn't ask for time off, he wanted to come straight back in, get around the squad. And, like, he wasn't like other younger players who were at the club who were a bit more highly thought of, because his attitude, like, all he wanted to do was actually play and to train. He wasn't interested in any of the other stuff, and that's great when you hear that. But then when you actually see it on the pitch and he's delivering on the pitch, that kind of tells you exactly where he's at. And I just hope that he's one of those players who can build. I think he has got that mentality where he can build on a very promising start in his career, and fingers crossed as he gets on, he is going to be one of those rocks at the back for Ireland, because he's given himself a base to go on and a platform to go on and really do that, you know.
Gav, tell us about Stephen Kenny in the aftermath of the game last night, because there was a feistiness there that we probably haven't seen since he took the job. Some people may have assumed that he's, you know, a timid character, but League of Ireland fans will know that he can get fired up as well. And I have to say, I enjoyed seeing him show that side of his personality at the end of a very tough week.
It was so much better than last Saturday night, Dolls. He was in the aftermath of the Luxembourg game. Now, the press conference didn't start for about an hour after the game. It took a very long time, and he wasn't any chirpier by the time that hour had passed. He was so dejected, so downbeat, and so torpid. Like, he was saying, I have conviction that I'll be a success here. But he said it with absolutely no conviction in his voice. You know, there was between the tone and the message were so off kilter. Yesterday was much better, I thought. I think even the pre-game ahead of yesterday's game, he was just a lot more direct and a lot more energetic. And yesterday, yeah, he really came out flat. He came out swinging to whatever was asked of him. I know he gave a strong interview to Tony O'Donoghue when he talked about there are critics coming out of the woodwork and trying to kick us while we're down. But I'm here because of my record is good. I went years without basically losing a game at Dundalk and won league title after league title. And then we asked him afterward in the press conference bit, the newspaper bit, if he's hurt by the criticism, and he says, no, I've experienced a lot of my life. I feel really strong. It doesn't hurt because, you know what? I don't care. I know what I'm doing. I'm very clear what I'm doing. And then that we will get back on track to give Irish supporters a team that they can be very proud of. I thought it was the right tone to hit after Saturday night. I know some people will look at that and say, that a manager has to resort to those kind of, that kind of talk already in his reign is a sign that things aren't going well. But look at, like, we know things aren't going well, you know. I mean, the results are bad and are not trending upwards. So I thought it was good that he said that. I know he said he's not hurt by the criticism. I got the impression that he is hurt by the criticism, and I would be mildly concerned as to how much attention he's paying to it. There was a moment in the pre-game press conference on Monday where he introduced this criticism out of nowhere. He brought it up himself that that some people were saying that his young players were not all that they were billed and will be back in the League of Ireland before long. And then listed them off and said, there's a real talent there. And I was scratching my head wondering, because I had no idea where this came from. Like, it wasn't implicit in the question that was asked. And since been found that it was buried halfway down a piece by Eamon Sweeney in the Irish Independent on Monday. You know, and he's obviously read that piece the day before a match or the day after the Luxembourg match. Sorry, the day before the match, obviously. And I just wonder what can be gained by paying that much attention to what is being said. Like, he's living in Ireland. Like, it is different for him to most previous Irish managers in the sense that he lives here and it's much harder. Like, Brian Kerr, well, he hasn't really talked too much about how the criticism affected him. Like, go back to Owen Hand. Like, Owen Hand was in the 80s was running a sports shop at the same time he was Ireland manager, and there are people phoning into the sports shop just abusing him, you know. Like, I mean, it's much more of a goldfish bowl here when you don't have the chance to escape to the north of Italy or the north of England, as our previous managers have got to do. But I'd be kind of a little bit concerned that he might pay too much attention to that stuff, to be honest. I can understand if he wants to defend his players, but I just hope that this doesn't become a fixation for him, that he can filter out the outside noise, because there's a lot of noise now. Some of it is still unfair. Like, I mean, calls for him to be sacked, I don't think that's fair. There was another, I saw Richard Dunn saying that, you know, that it was the performance at Saturday night was as if the manager just kind of was reading straight from an academy coach book. I don't think that's fair either. Like, Kenny's had a mad managerial career and it's been forged in mad situations. Like in Derry, when he went back, the club were effectively bust. No one was getting wages. Like, they went months without getting wages. Mortgage payments were missed. Weddings had to be cancelled. Like, that's real life experience that I think people are a bit dismissive of because of the way Kenny talks about the game. But I just hope it doesn't become a fixation.
So let's fill in the report card for this international window. Dave, I'll throw it over to you first, just to give us your thoughts in general now, reflecting on the two qualifiers. And with that in mind, what does the future look like for this team?
I think one of the things that strikes me is we're going to just have to deal with inconsistency in terms of performances from players and also selection. I think inconsistency in selection is something that is just, I think, is natural for most international managers, just in terms of the nature of it, whereby obviously we've got, 6 months now until the next competitive games, obviously to be the summer training camp and then those friendlies with Andorra and Hungary. But inconsistent in the sense that, well, we don't know what the situation is going to be like in 6 months' time. He'll be in form, he'll be fit. So in terms of that, I think we just have to accept that, which we always have, really. And then it's going to be something that Kenny's going to have to be able to deal with, really. And then in terms of the performances from players, when you look at it, what I say that is, it's just, if you look at the standard of players that we have, really, I think, and where they're at, it's just going to be in their nature whereby it's going to be very difficult to maintain any form of consistency. They're going to be, like, I remember, it's always something that I think it sticks with me whenever Graeme Souness talks about it. And I think it's a very good point where he talks, if you look at players who maybe play below the top leagues around anywhere, be it the Premier League, Serie A, wherever, like, there's players where you look at them and you say, 1 week, Jez, he could play for anyone, you know, he's brilliant, he's great. But then the next week, he's not. And I think there's a lot of players in that Ireland squad who are like that, where it's going to be, I wouldn't say flimsy, but I just think it's going to be difficult for them. Kenny referenced it himself after the Luxembourg game, where he actually realised that maybe it could be a good thing from him. It could be the most, I guess, and it was a harsh learning curve for them in the sense of learning about his players, not so much in terms of management, because as Gav said there, like, it's like he's not just someone who's come straight from a classroom. And I think it's also important, sorry, just without diverging quickly, I think it's also important when he talks about why he got the job, and I think it's almost being forgotten. Like, go back to 2016, that Dundalk, how Dundalk played in Europe, and that's on the back of a couple of years of working with that group of players and how Dundalk played. And yeah, like, they didn't get past the group, but he, at that point, was changing the perception of what Irish players could do and how Irish teams could play. And I think it's interesting, I think a lot of pressure then began to come on the international managers more so then when they saw what Dundalk were doing and how Dundalk were playing. The guy who was fortunate to cover that campaign, going to games away to AZ Alkmaar, and even before that with the Batley Borisov, and just the manner of how they played. But going away and seeing how Dundalk played, it was really good. Now, it was exciting to watch, and like, there's no getting away from it. Like, they still didn't qualify, they didn't get through, but at no point did they look totally out of their depth in that qualifying group. And they were coming up against Zenit St. Petersburg, AZ Alkmaar, who at that point were a really strong side, and Maccabi, was it Tel Aviv? Jesus, I was there, I'm after forgetting them. Maccabi Tel Aviv, I think it was. Yeah, it was. And like, they were really impressive. So I think as well, that's a big reason why he was able to get the job and have a bit more of a credibility about getting it. It wasn't just because of what he'd done at Dundalk domestically, because that was obviously very impressive. It was, I think people were saying, well, if he can do that with Dundalk in Europe, having had a couple of years with them and pretty much got them where he wanted them, well, what could he do with Ireland with a bit of time? And so far, obviously, so far you can tell the levels of what he's trying to do and how it's going to be a lot more difficult. But going back to it in terms of this campaign, what I would say about the players would be is that's what he would have learned is that he's going to have to rely on players who can deal with those short sharp bursts of games. And like, we're going to see it in the next window big time, when it's going to be what, Portugal away and then the double header at home with Serbia and Azerbaijan. So you would like to think that it's a horrible way to do it when you get beaten at home to Luxembourg, but if he's learned about what his players can do under those constraints and under those pressures, well then hopefully you might get selection a bit better and formation and all the rest of it. And you would think then that's what he has to show as much as Anna and as much as the players, is that he's learned about them and he's learned how to manage them through these kind of windows of games.
Mm. And just to jump in there, Dals, the consistency of selection thing is a big thing, you know, like, that's one of the big questions over Kenny, you know, like, these players are struggling for match fitness, but he was always able to play them at club level, you know, this isn't something he's had to deal with before. And he played through the back for every minute of these three games. And I was quite critical of the decision to do that, to stick with that against Luxembourg, because it wasn't working. Like, they knew what we were doing, and Kieran Clark was just a bit of a nightmare, and just we couldn't break that first press. And then by the second half, with Doherty gone off injured, he ended up sticking to the system as a kind of a dogma that didn't suit the game, because we had players out of position, and you took Alan Brown out of the position where he's most dangerous and play him right back. So I was very critical of that. But I can understand why he did it now on reflection. The fact that, you know, we've now had three full games in relatively the same formation, and things are relatively not things weren't disrupted to the same extent as they have been previously. Like, from the team that gathered on the training ground at the start of the window last weekend, or the weekend before last, he only lost Aaron Connolly from that time to half time against Luxembourg when Matt Doherty went. So I can kind of understand why he's done that. And it actually puts, pressure is maybe the wrong word, but it's important now, the summertime. Ireland have a 9-day training camp in Spain. There'll be friendly games against Andorra and Hungary. And I think that's a good opportunity to build some more coherence and build some more understanding and work off something that we can bring into the autumn.
Yeah, just to touch on the point you were making there, Gav, I do want to get your considered kind of summary on the international window as well. But your analysis of the Luxembourg game on the 42 on Monday, I was about to say I enjoyed it, but that's probably not the right way of putting it. But I certainly appreciated the veracity of it anyway, shall we say. But in the piece, you addressed Kenny's failure to adjust the shape of the team when a change was needed during the game. Would that be a concern going forward, that he's a bit too slow to adapt and recognise that something needs to be done and that adjustments are needed to be made?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, you see, the debate is so polarized about Kenny, you know, it's very hard to separate him from what he represents, I suppose, his ideas and his principles of play. And I think we have to get to a point where the, like, how we talk about the team is, you have to, those two things can be true at the same time. Like, Kenny can have the right ideas and principles while also being, he may not be the right man to implement them. So you can see what Luxembourg did. They just kind of, they said, like, Ireland, the onus is on Ireland to go after and win that game. And they just said to Ireland, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to let Kieran Clarke have the ball, the left side of the back three, and just pass around us. And they, like, they were really well drilled. Like, they didn't have too many ideas, Luxembourg, but what they did have, they knew it very well. And then they pressed Enda Stevens to a point where he was facing back to goal way too often. And then Ireland lacked the quality in midfield to take the ball, just even spin in the half turn and open the pitch up. Like, Josh Cullen is a player I like, and I think he's got a lot of qualities, but I think I may have slightly overrated him based off the performance against Luxembourg. You know, I'm too easily seduced by the fact that, oh, he's playing out in Belgium, so they must play a bit of ball out there.
That's what I mean, sorry, about the consistency thing, where you're going to have performances like that from the likes of a Cullen, where, like, they will look, they look the business, they look really neat and tidy, like he did against Serbia, where the midfield worked. And you have Jason Malumbi with that energy, and you had Adam Brown with that, maybe a bit more, with his goal, getting into the box. Like, Jesus, if you could get performances like that, maybe that first half against Serbia out of them in every game, well, that'd be the midfield, because it's the perfect, I think it's the perfect match. But that's what I mean about that consistency. And yeah, you're bang on in terms of that assessment of when you're with the review of the piece. It was just, you were kind of crying out to be a bit more proactive with the change, because Luxembourg had a sus within about 10 minutes. And after that James Collins miss, after that, they kind of realised, well, there's not much else to worry about here once we stick to our plan, because Ireland aren't doing nothing else to actually bother us. And that was a bit, that was the biggest concern I felt as well from that night, was nothing actually, there was no understanding that Luxembourg were actually very comfortable in the game. Like, if you were thinking,
yeah,
at no point were you thinking, oh, there's a goal coming, there wasn't. Like,
and any time, like, Ireland could get out of that little, that kind of section of the pitch in their, like, in their own left back zone where Luxembourg hemmed them in, like, they did look dangerous. Like, I read stuff as, like, this conclusively proves that Doherty and Coleman can't play together. That's not true. Like, they can, they have a good understanding, actually. Like, in the 10th minute or something in that Luxembourg game, Coleman comes in on an underlap to allow Jason Knight overlap Doherty, and they put a good cross in. And later in the half, Coleman overlaps Doherty, and they come in and create a chance that way, you know. And the Collins chance came from playing out, from finally playing out from that left back zone by giving the ball to Bazunu, and he played a really brilliant first time pass to Doherty. So you can understand, I could understand the first half why Kenny was like, let's stick with this, because part of it is working, but the part that didn't work overwhelmed the part that did work. And then the second half was kind of a bit bewildering to me, to be honest, because Kenny listed off the many reasons why he played that system in Serbia. It allowed Doherty and Coleman to play together. It put Connolly, it gave him a partner up front. It put Alan Brown centrally breaking into the box to be a goal threat. It matched Serbia's 3-4-3. In the second half, none of that was relevant. He even took Brown and put him right wing back. So it's actually, you know, by his own metrics for playing the system, he stuck with it, and those metrics didn't exist in the second half, you know. So, and Robbie Brady, I thought, was good when he came on. He put in some good crosses, but I would have liked to have seen like a 4-3-3 where just Daryl Horgan was sat on the bench unused. And Daryl Horgan's always looked good for Ireland, I think, under Kenny. Bring him on, cutting in off the left, Brady off the right, you have Stevens and Coleman overlapping, and Jason Knight playing at the back of midfield. He looks much better pushed on, as he did against Qatar last night. But, like, he was kept at the base of midfield, and Ireland stuck in that shape. There was also the basic arithmetic problem in the second half, just not putting enough numbers forward. You know, I was really grim to watch the fact that it was 0-0 after 75 minutes, and we still had two centre backs and two centre midfielders behind the ball when we were attacking. Like, that's not, there was that level of it's just lacking urgency as well. And okay, you can say there's no crowd there, but, you know, change the players' positions and then they'll get a bit of urgency because they'll be closer to goal. So I think there's more, you can't just pin the whole problem for the Luxembourg game and the manager. But at the same time, you can't look at it and say, well, look, Irish football has been running to the ground for 15 years. This is what Kenny has to deal with. This is like absolve him from blame entirely. He could have done more to influence that game, I think.
And it's important we kind of touch on that as well, as you know, that, you know, while Stephen Kenny has to share his bit of responsibility for what has gone for the current state of affairs, in spite of all the criticism, it's not as if you know, he took over a team that was flourishing and that things have gone to pot. Like, this team has been in steady decline since really the Denmark playoff. And as you mentioned there, Gav, you know, anybody who would have read the Champagne football book would have probably be surprised that we haven't gotten to this point sooner, actually. We're starting to see the results of that now, aren't we?
Yeah, totally. Like, players haven't come through. Like, Neil O'Riordan was making this point that, you know, there's a group of players, many of them played in that under-19s team that got to the semi-finals of the Euros 10 years ago now. Doherty, Duffy, Brady, Hendrick. Who else am I missing from that team? Oh, I can't remember. But, you know, that group of players have come through and done their bit for Ireland. They were the backbone of the team that did well at Euro 2016. And now Kenny is bringing through this younger crop. But there's almost no one in the middle there. You know, we have a group of experienced players who are not, a lot of them are not playing regularly at club level. And I think have proved over the last few years at Ireland that they haven't always delivered when it's mattered. And the young players coming through, some of whom I think they're also developing at different rates. So like O'Shea looks, is ready now. Like he can play in every Ireland team for the next 10 years, as far as I can see. Bazunu is younger than that still. He is actually a contender to challenge Darren Randolph as number one, as far as I can tell now at this point. I think he's been fantastic. Jason Knight looks much further advanced in his development than, say, Parrott and Malumbi. I think they have a long way to go yet, particularly Parrott, just from a physicality point of view. They put him up front centrally after Shane Long went off last night, and he really struggled. Like, he's not ready for that yet. He looks good dropping off in the kind of David McGoldrick role that we saw under Mick and then at the beginning of Stephen's reign. So they're not quite ready yet. And then there's just no one in the middle, you know. Very few players have come through. John Egan, maybe. And it took Martin O'Neill something like 3 years to give him a debut after he was finished with the 21s. And that's John Egan, who Martin O'Neill had at Sunderland. So you can't say that he didn't know him. So more could have been done, I think, under O'Neill, really, to bring through players, you know. And we won't get into Rice and Grealish, but, you know, they were lost under Martin O'Neill's watch as well. So I'll stop kicking Martin O'Neill when he's down now. But yeah, it's just, that's just one specific example, Dolls, of the fact that, yeah, there are troubles here that were sowed many years ago.
Dave, you alluded to it earlier as well. Like, there's a school of thought that Ireland don't have the players capable of implementing the style of play that Stephen Kenny favours. First of all, is that fair? And secondly, if it's not, then what's the alternative? Because I can't think of any team who's currently having success at a decent level of the game by using a direct long ball agricultural approach.
Well, that's it. And like you said it yourself earlier, only like about, it's not as if he's come in and ripped up a kind of a blueprint that has been tremendously successful and has been extremely coherent and was working and everyone was happy with it. Like he came in and like he came in on the basis with obviously promising this injection of positivity. That's what it was. Like there seems to be a bit of a almost a, like, it's mad that you get called a football hipster for wanting to see your team pass the game or pass the football, which is funny. But like there seems to be this thing that, like, even calling it ticky tacky and all the rest of it, like Kenny just came in and basically said that he thinks he can get more out of the players, that they can play a more vibrant style of football, and was gonna try and do it. Like if you look at the results, clearly that hasn't happened. If you look at the performances on a whole, as of yet, that hasn't happened. There have been signs, not nowhere near enough that you can say, well, this group of players are definitely going to be able to do it. Like, and even like Gav made the point earlier, and again, he's bang on, and it sort of seems to have been lost. When people are talking about what Kenny's trying to do, it's not as if everyone's defending Kenny and saying, well, he is 100% the right person for the job. When he came in, people were confident because of the message he was trying to put across. And what they were saying, yeah, that's what does need to happen. Like, it doesn't need to be a case of, oh, well, if this goes to bits and Ireland don't get another point in the group trying to do what Stephen Kenny is trying to do, that, well, we have to just rip it up and go back to what it was before. Like, it's not that. If he can't do it, but has put the wheels in motion, well, then you kind of, you can't just give up on that. Like, people, he got the job on the basis that that's what the FAI, presumably, I know obviously there's a new CEO now, but that's what the FAI were going for. I know obviously Roy Barrett has come out in support of him, but it's also important to see, well, what do the FAI want from Stephen Kenny? Are they prepared to not qualify for a World Cup on the basis that he bloods enough players through and keeps them motivated? Because it is one of the things that I would say from this, in terms of, say, this thing of philosophy and all the rest of it. If you look at it in terms of results, clearly it's not going well on the pitch because the results haven't been great. The performance, as I said, bits and bobs have been good. There's been some good signs, but then you lose to Luxembourg and a lot of the good work goes, or a lot of goodwill as well, I'd say, or benefit out goes out the window. The big thing would be how the players feel about this. And Stephen Kenny talking about the courage of his convictions is important, because if he shows any weakness, or if he shows that, well, do you know what, yeah, you aren't good enough to do this, so I'm going to just rip it up, he has to stick with it, he has to go with it, and not even to the point where for sheer bloody mindedness, but if he feels, well, he is the man to do this, and he's going to be given this kind of platform to maybe have another campaign, at least he sticks with it, because he's setting tone for what will be coming true, or coming next, if there even is enough quality. Because if he just decides to throw everything out the window on the basis of, well, he needs to just save his job and do what appeases some of his critics, well, then he could lose longer term because of that, because he's kind of thrown out his principles just to save his job in the short term. And now I've said that, and even in my own head, I'm like, Jesus, that is naive in the extreme for me to even say that, because obviously you have to be in the job to be able to do the job. And where I'm coming from on it is, if he's saying there, that he said it earlier, Kenny himself, where he was like, he knows he's gonna be here to see this through. In my mind, he has to show over the course of the campaign, the rest of this campaign, that it's beginning to click, and not just in 15, 20 minute spells, and that players do stick with it, because it won't be long until maybe some of them begin to doubt him if he's not getting that message across. Not, I don't mean doubt because of where he's come from or what he's done, but just in how he is around the players. Like, if he shows weakness, or if he shows an inability to be strong when he has to be, that's when players will begin to think no. And like, I would say as well, that it's one of the points that has been thrown at people who maybe have, it's almost, I won't even say defended Kenny, but it's a point that I think is important to make. And I know I've said it before, whereby like stuff has been written and said about players in the squad and their relationship with Kenny and how they feel about Kenny. And then when you counter that and actually speak to people, and you say, well, that's not actually happening, you get called a cheerleader. Like, there's more than enough to criticize Stephen Kenny with of what's happened so far on the pitch, and enough to legitimately query, well, where things are going, without falsehoods to try and rubber stamp your idea. Like, I would be honest and say, obviously I want Stephen Kenny to be a success, but if it becomes very, very clear at the end of, by the end of this campaign and even into the next one, but that, you know what, it's not happening, well, then you have to accept that. But accept it for the honesty of what's happening on the pitch and what's actually going on behind the scenes. And if things do begin to turn, well, then that's gonna come out. That's gonna be clear, and that's when the FAI will have a decision. But at the moment, if the players, as they are saying publicly, privately and around the camp, are still behind the manager and still behind what he wants to do and feel as if, yeah, they are capable, it's just going to take that bit of time to actually get it in place, well, then you have to stick with it. But then obviously you can't be blind to the results either, and it's going to be that balancing act. And I feel as if I've just talked myself around in circles there a little bit, but I don't think it has to be a case of one or the other, or kind of one camp or the next camp. Just like, judge the man fairly on everything that's happening. And no one wants to talk about, no one wants to hear, especially about work being done behind the scenes and stuff that's happening with preparation for games and the atmosphere around the camp when results aren't going well. No one wants to hear about positive work that is happening when the results and the performances as a whole aren't there yet, but it still can't be ignored. You know, you have to just give the man time to see if he can do it. If he can't do it, he won't stay in the job. If he can, and it's clear he will, then he'll stay in it. And you just have to be fair on him.
Gav, Dave mentioned there the FAI chairman, Roy Barrett, has given his backing to Stephen Kenny. But is an early termination of his contract something the FAI could even afford anyway if they wanted it? And as you put yourself in your piece on Monday, a team that can't attract a shirt sponsor is unlikely to attract a better manager.
Well, the FAI say that money doesn't come into it if it is an issue. Speaking broadly, they were asked if money comes into an issue, becomes an issue if they want to terminate a contract early, and they said no. So take that as they can't afford to sack him if they really need to, but they just don't want to. And I think it was good, fair, actually, the FAI to come out. Roy Barrett gave them a pretty pretty strong backing. It actually probably went further than it needed to, in him saying that he's in line for a contract extension if there's further progress. And he was asked what are the metrics here? What are his KPIs, to use a really bad corporate phrase. But it's not just results, obviously. You know, it's general, like, you know, blooding of young players, feeling among the players, staff, playing staff as a whole. There are a number of things that'll come into it when these things are being judged by Kenny. But at the moment, holding firm that Roy Barrett, the chairperson, gave him support. Jerry McEnany, the president, who's also was in the team bubble for the last few days, or for the whole of the camp, we should say. He says things are positive because no one is running for the hills, so no one is crying off. There was a board meeting Monday. It wasn't like an emergency thing to discuss the team. It was a scheduled board meeting, and all the vibes are that everything is holding firm behind Stephen Kenny for now. So his contract is up at the end of his qualification campaign. So at the moment, things could change, but at the moment, all signs are that he'll get the full campaign to prove whether he's worth sticking with for the qualification for year 2024, because everyone says it's important that we take a long-term view. And sadly, that is what we have to do, because it certainly doesn't look like we're going to go to the World Cup.
Yeah, just very briefly, lads, before we finish up, are there any positives we can take away from the past week or so? I'm conscious that we're spreading the doom and gloom here for the poor listeners. I mean, I know the parallels have been drawn between the tough start that Michael O'Neill had with Northern Ireland, and Luxembourg showed as well against Portugal last night that they're not the pushovers that some people had dismissed them as. I'll go to you first, Dave. Is there anything you'd pick out that was encouraging about these past three games?
Well, obviously, we've mentioned Dara O'Shea. Gav made the point as well about Gavin Bazunu. The fact that he's now pretty much like a challenger, I would say, for Randolph for the number one. Like, it was one of the things, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I wrote the piece for the Irish Examiner today after the game. But it was one of the things that struck me about Bazunu's performance yesterday. Obviously, for his debut, like, he was really impressive. Not that he played it safe, but he looked safe, you know, he looked the part. Whereas last night, he took a few more chances. He was like a bit more proactive. He kind of embraced a bit of the chaos that can come with that a little bit, and he made mistakes, but at no point did he lose his head, if that makes sense. Like, he could have been sent off twice, the foul after the goal, and then when he kind of came out of the box. But like, he just showed tremendous mental fortitude in any sense that of how he was passing, and even how he was passing the ball, like little things like passing it out in front of the defender to run onto, rather than maybe behind him or just to his feet where it could take another, you know, to turn back in on himself or take another touch. He was always positive, and it was even funny where he'd make a pass and then he'd call him for a back. You could hear it on the telly, and you could hear him shouting. He was wanting to like get a pass back after setting it up, and he just seemed really confident. And even but doing then the kind of more obvious basics of goalkeepers, he made a great reaction save from that header in the first half. I know it was offside, but it was a good save. I was looking at the goal thinking, was he a bit, what happened for the goal? But I think he obviously maybe a bit out of sight with the, I think it was Malumbi covering for the shot. And I just thought he was really impressive. And if you're talking about that training camp, obviously he's now going to be in and around that first team squad. You would think from now on, I'd say the first three goalkeepers now, like Randolph, you're probably talking Randolph, Bazunu, Kelleher, depending on what happens over the next few months, because by the time September comes around, Like, we don't know where Bazunu will be. Will he still be at Rochdale? It's going to be a new season. Will Man City want him part of their squad, or will he want to continue his development somewhere else? So I'd say, if you're looking at it, Bazunu is a positive. And if I'm really, as I said this earlier, if I'm really clutching at straws, a positive might be that Kenny might have learned a bit more about players' physical capabilities and what they're able for when maybe, as he said himself beforehand, coming into games undercooked a little bit. So that could be, you would hope, a positive. Other than that, not a lot, other than the fact that it's a few more months now without a game.
Gav, what about you? Anything that stood out for you that bodes well for the future?
Hey, obviously Bazunu is great. I'm really excited about, looking forward to a few years with him and Callagher battling it out for a number one spot in the new Doherty Coleman conundrum. Although at least the manager, whoever it is, won't be asked. And do you think they can both play in the same team? Although they're so good on the ball. Like, I mean, our goalkeepers are so much better on the ball than most of our outfield players, which is a bit exasperating. What else? Dar O'Shea, obviously. And I think that the players that are still to come back in, I think that I'd like to see that team play last night with Adam Eade up front rather than Shane Long, for instance, because we actually, to be fair to Long, like, I wouldn't rate him very highly, but his pace in behind and his running gave Ireland a bit of an outlet when they needed it. And it wasn't full on route one like it was in the dog days under O'Neill and Mick, in the sense that it was just the one default option. In the first half, we kind of used it fairly sparingly but fairly cleverly. In the second half, after Long went off, then we did it too much. You know, it became a kind of a default and the game became nothing. The fact that John Egan still has come back into the team, I think, is more significant than has been given play so far. Like, I mean, Kenny called John Egan one of our best players this week. He did that Q&A with supporters a couple of weeks ago where he ran through what the RT panel would call good Irish play against Slovakia and other games. And he said Egan is critical to how we play. And he's the one player. We don't have anyone in midfield who can kind of break lines and get in a half turn, but Egan can stride out of defence and break lines by either carrying the ball or passing it. We look a lot better with him in the team. And then obviously the only other positive really is that Luxembourg represents rock bottom and we've no further to fall. So fingers crossed.
Do you think so?
I don't know. I can't say that with any guarantee in fairness. I don't know. I mean, I was like Azerbaijan equalised against Serbia there yesterday and I was thinking, Jesus, I don't know if this is good for Ireland or not, because, okay, Serbia might drop points, but fuck, are Azerbaijan handy and are we going to struggle against them as well? So maybe there is further to fall.
They weren't great. I don't know. Yeah, no, I'm the same. You just don't know. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to put my faith, lads, in Caoimhín Kelleher as our future number one anyway, as a fellow Cork man. But I do think we could find room for Gavin Bazunu in the number 10 shirt, given his range of passing. But great stuff, lads. We're going to leave it there for now. That is a wrap for another international window for Ireland, thank God. Stephen Kenny's side are due to play a couple of friendlies against Andorra and Hungary during a training camp in June. And then we'll ease our way back into the World Cup qualification campaign with a nice handy game against Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal on September 1st, I think it is. I'm sure you're all counting down the days to that one already. Gavin Cooney and David Sneyd, thank you both for your insight on this podcast. And thank you as well to our members for listening. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated. Take care for now, folks, and we'll speak to you again soon.